percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
I can't believe it's already 2018. Like, whoa, it was just a flash and 2017 disappeared with a whole lot of drama. Oh, but no, the drama stays. That's what's so fun about this. There's always something new and something interesting. The interesting thing we're going to kick off the year with is my interview coming up here, Blowing America's Mind. Paul Jeffrey Davids on the book with his co-author John Selby. These guys have an extraordinary story. They were part of the MK Ultra program, okay? And he'll talk a little bit about that, but really you need to research it because there's more that we can cover in the short time that we have about just the stuff that goes on with that. But for them to be part of it meant that they underwent some interesting experiences that had to do with combining the drugs, very incredibly powerful drugs that were at that time kind of popular with Timothy Leary. LSD was getting a lot of headlines. Anyway, and then combining that with hypnosis to see what was possible. So that's a story we're going to cover here with my guest, Paul Davids. I've already talked with him before. Forry Ackerman, he had an experience, a book that he came out that Forry had come back to connect with him and was proving there was life after death. And the Life After Death Project is what he goes into. He's also got some other work that he's done with the UFOs and Roswell. And this is perfect for him because we're going to have to talk with him again about that aspect. We're so close to maybe having a disclosure of some kind. And that's what I put on the blog, on the road to disclosure, expect intentional obfuscation. That's kind of self-explanatory. But then there's 2018, the year to celebrate all things curious. So we're diving into the curious. Starting off with that, and the stuff that we can't explain, the one that stuck out, is this stuff is just happening daily. I go through and glean the headlines to see for the really interesting and offbeat things. The fact that the UFO story, the study, the Pentagon study, actually getting the light of day and coming out there mid-December right under the wire for 2017 means 2018 might have a little bit more to offer. But how far are they going to go? And are they going to be able to put out a UFO expert who is also in some way, shape, or form a titled member of the government for the United States? I think they might be just a little bit leery of doing that and saying, I'm a UFO expert, because at this point, even the experts who are say, there's nobody who's an expert. This stuff is mind-boggling, and if you think you understand it and you think you know where it's coming from, I think that's what Senator Harry Reid said, something along that line of we don't know what it is, and that's why we're looking. The other thing, too, is the psychic stuff and the unexplained things that get you to do things you don't anticipate. This woman went to buy a lottery ticket, and that's because this thing, right now we're looking at Mega Millions and Powerball being, whoa, through the roof, unless that changes in the immediate future. Anyway, the thing with this is she was in New York playing a scratch-off ticket. She asked, and give me a scratch-off ticket, and it was $1. The clerk made a mistake, and the clerk gave her a $10 ticket. And she said, well, it was the wrong ticket, so what she did, she felt bad. She went ahead and bought it, even though it was $10. She's, well, yeah, just didn't want to point the woman's mistake out. She said she actually used it as a bookmark for a couple of weeks, and then she decided that it should go ahead and scratch it. It was a $5 million prize. She said, I never win anything. I thought it was a fake, so I, you know, went ahead and went to the office, and then she realized it was real. So here she is. She goes in to buy a scratch-off, a dollar scratch-off. This woman has incredible guardian angels, okay? I want them. Gets the wrong ticket, pays $10 instead of one. And the name of the ticket that she actually purchased and bought and cleaned up on, Set for Life. She got you might have a nice day ticket, but the Set for Life ticket, okay? So there you go. Duplicate that one. The other thing that is going on right now, there's so much happening that I wanted to just kind of include this. I don't have time to talk about all of these things on air. But if you do some of your own research and due diligence, because when I was saying there might be some obfuscation, with the stuff that we get into with the MK Ultra program that was funded through various back channels and fake companies so that it would erase the trail, that's probably what's happening now with a lot of the UFO research, because it's too compelling, and there have been too many people with very good credentials and pedigrees coming forward and saying, this is real. We're not faking it. We can't explain it. And especially when it involves the nukes, shutting down nuclear power facilities, the little buttons that say launch, those kinds of things are happening. And they're not just in the United States. So there has to be, in some way, shape, or form, some kind of continued investigation, whether it's under the auspices of the government or some other program that is kind of loosely related, and yet connected. And I just think it was interesting when we had interviews with President Obama, and he kind of did a wink-wink with the interview. I think it was Jimmy Kimmel. I can't remember if it was Kimmel or who asked him about the UFO program and whether we were investigating, and if he knew, he couldn't say. Well, yeah, can you say? Well, if I knew, I couldn't say. Okay, so things like that, whether he knew or not, it's irrelevant. It's the fact that even if something's going on, which is what we discovered with the guys who were the CIA spies, and Uri Geller and Ingo Swann and Pat Price and the Joe McMonagle, saying they could only give out so much information because it was top secret. And so they had to be ridiculed and suffer people saying it's just bogus and you guys are full of yourselves and this is totally, completely impossible. Why would you even think that, you know, we would believe you? And then coming out and saying, oh, by the way, now that there's been disclosure with that program, they can talk a little bit more about it. Because at the time Ingo Swann wrote his book Penetration, which is supposedly all fiction, there are some elements to that that are supposedly legit. What they are, well, at this point, he's deceased, so we can't go back and ask. But it was his way of saying, read what you will and believe what you might. Some of this is actual reality. And that was his way of getting a word out and suggesting that there might be more things going on here in our reality than we have been programmed and allowed and encouraged to believe. And when we get into this stuff with Paul Davids, there is so much more that we can't go into, but a description of how he experiences this programming is in the book, and there's several. The other one that John Selby goes into is a little darker and intense, and he had some major issues, just in mental health issues, undergoing these experiences. Both of them have recovered. They're both extremely successful in our terms of success, and that shows that, you know, we can recover from this kind of stuff. But there might be other people who haven't. And so it's a good time to bring up the combinations now of what can be possible with all the things that we are experimenting and exploring with the other thing of intelligence, which is, I think, taking us to an entirely different type of life, different type of reality. When we're talking, Elon Musk talking about artificial intelligence and what that might do if you throw that into the equation with all of these other things that kind of mess with your grip on reality. So a lot of fascinating stuff, and it's all coming down the line, all right, in 2018. Wow, what a year to wake up or dream or go out of body and imagine all the stuff that we can create. And that's what's happening as we're going through this and learning. Check out the movie Stephen Greer, Unacknowledged, on Vimeo. There's some of it, you know, but it goes alongside the stories that I've talked about, and I've interviewed people out, the Aztec UFO and the Children of Roswell, what they remembered and what they were told that they shouldn't remember or had no reality basis for remembering. They said, yeah, this is just bogus. Uh-uh, it doesn't exist. No, it never happened. Oh, by the way, we've been investigating this, and by the way, it might have happened. Yeah, things that make you curious. All right, coming up, my guest, Paul Davids, Blowing America's Mind, a true story of Princeton CIA mind control, LSD, and Zen on Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. We're going to take a little trip little mind trip here. And it's probably one you don't want to go on, but you're lucky because you're riding shotgun on this. My guest, Paul Jeffrey Davids, co-author of Blowing America's Mind, True Story of Princeton CIA Mind Control, LSD, and Zen. A nice combo. I've interviewed him before about the Life After Death project that he did with Forry Ackerman. And that's another story in itself, okay? So we might just kind of go back and review that in a moment or two. But first, this, with the latest bombshell in the New York Times when they released the story, Leslie Kane and her co-author, Ralph Blumenthal, I believe, they debuted the story that we did have a UFO, a secret Pentagon UFO study going on. That's excellent because it says that there's a lot of stuff secret. Well, this brings up the topic for what happened with Paul and his friend, John Selby, with the CIA mind control program. That's what was called the MK Ultra project.
It was part of MK Ultra. It was when we were students at Princeton University. There was nearby the New Jersey Neuropsychiatric Institute. We were psychology majors.
Okay.
And they were running a study there using deep hypnosis and LSD experimentation that we both signed up for. We volunteered for it, partially because it was run by a famous psychiatrist named Dr. Humphrey Osmond. Dr. Osmond is the man who coined the term psychedelic, and he had been doing research with psychedelic drugs for many years since he was had been up in Canada and researched peyote with the Native Americans in their ceremonies. So we didn't know at the time. We volunteered to undergo hypnosis a couple of times a week, and it went on for about a year, longer with John Selby, who was in the program first.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know that it was funded by the CIA. We didn't know anything about MKUltra, their mind control projects, and the CIA had many, many mind control projects at that time. So we put it all down in our new book, which is called Blowing America's Mind, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And it's just come out. We've been working on it really for decades because it was the book that was impossible to finish. But we have told our story of what happened to us while we were at Princeton and the effects that the program had on us and eventually how we discovered the CIA connection to it. And the fact that MKUltra at that time, they had almost 150 mind control projects going on at 86 American institutions. Well, include Canada also.
Yeah, that's mind-blowing in itself that many are going on with under the radar.
They were funneling the money to researchers, professors, psychologists, psychiatrists through dummy corporations so it couldn't be traced to the CIA. In fact, the money for the program we were part of came from a company called the Society for the Investigation of Human Ecology.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, what is that? What does that mean?
It sounds official. Ecology, okay.
Right, but we thought that it was time to come out with our story now. And coincidentally, now Wormwood is having the story of Frank Olson, who was given LSD without his knowledge and went out a window. That was in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
Our experiences were toward the end of the 1960s, and it was the time of the psychedelic revolution, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Young people across the country were turning to LSD, and Ken Kesey and his electric Kool-Aid, you know, his acid test. His Merry Pranksters, they were giving acid in various cities across the country in Kool-Aid. But we were trying to do it in a legitimate way through research at an established institution, the New Jersey Neuropsych Institute. But we didn't know what we were getting ourselves in for.
Oh, yeah.
And the emphasis was, it was more on a deep hypnosis. LSD was part of it, but it was deep hypnosis with memory erasure and hypnotic conditions to change perception. And we cover it all in Blowing America's Mind. And what it was like to be at Princeton at that time. It was still an all-male school. It was like shortly before it went co-ed for the first time.
Okay. Yes, this is a lot of college hijinks that, you know, you do cover that.
Mm-hmm.
Just the fun part of going to school and getting the permission to do this kind of thing. The other, what was it? Who was it? Cary Grant, who had done the LSD and was, there was, I can't
yes. remember.
That was one of the things that was
LSD,
attractive.
Yes. LSD psychotherapy.
Yes.
And this was in the early 1960s, and Cary Grant was touting how much LSD had helped him. And in the early 60s, the coverage in the news on LSD was generally very favorable. You know, it was being described as a mind-expanding drug that had great promise for the future. But all that turned around, and by 1966, it was against federal law to possess it. But there was still research going on, certainly at the New Jersey Neuropsychiatric Institute, even though a lot of institutes were beginning to be shut down in terms of their access to it at that time.
Well, and that was at the same time the marijuana laws flipped.
Well, I think the... What do you mean flipped? Because the marijuana laws have always been rather harsh and
extreme.
Punitive.
Extreme, yeah. The felonies, I mean, when you were talking about Timothy Leary in the book saying, you know, 10 years, originally sentenced to 10 years for possession of a joint.
Yeah, that's right. And they did something similar with Ken Kesey, 5 years for possession of a couple of joints. Ken Kesey was a famous author back then, young, in his mid-20s, had written One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yes.
And then Tom Wolfe wrote a book about Ken Kesey and his Merry Pranksters, and the psychedelically painted school bus that Ken Kesey took across the country. And that book was The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. You know, the funny thing, well, for John Selby and myself, we felt like our experiences were a true life. One flew over the cuckoo's nest. You know, we flew over the cuckoo's nest. And we describe that, all that happened in great detail.
Well,
a little bit like, I want to say it's a little bit like, if you remember, there was a movie called A Beautiful Mind.
Yes,
it was the
yes.
Major Academy Award winner. It took place at Princeton, and it was about a Princeton professor who had a psychosis. I mean, he was schizophrenic, and there were a lot of... experiences that in his mind were real, but never really happened. And it's interesting because that was at Princeton. And well, I think our book, Blowing America's Mind, is the only other book that or project that I know of that really deals with consciousness alterations that set in the Princeton environment.
Well, yes. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on or has gone on. Was the Pear Lab, wasn't that part of Princeton?
Which lab?
The Pear, P-E-A-R,
yes.
Pear Lab.
Yes. Well, they did paranormal studies there mm-hmm. in the physics department, too.
Well, that would be consciousness as well, because they were trying to tap into all sorts of things.
Could consciousness influence a table of random numbers, for example? That was one of their experiments.
Yes. Yeah, I want to get back into your stuff, just because with this, the programming that went into it was technically intended so that you would not remember it. It was to counter what was going on so that you wouldn't blow the whistle or, you know, either deviate from the planned curriculum. And that backfired in a way. We have to go to a break here, but I want to find out why and how the two of you figured out after you left the program that this was a lot more intense and maybe subversive than you originally understood. Okay, so can we, we'll dive into that in this next break, all right?
Okay.
I've got my guest is the co-author, Paul Davids, and John Selby wrote Blowing America's Mind. This is a true story, and this, when you get into reading this and reading some of the stuff that went on, the kind of programming that these guys underwent, you understand this could be pretty dangerous if it's still going on in some way, shape, or form anywhere in the world, which I kind of suspect it might be. It's effective. A true story of Princeton CIA mind control, LSD, and Zen, like a trifecta here. All right. All sorts of entertainment and excitement to kick off the new year. Wendy's Coffee House coming up again, more with my guest, Paul Davids, on KCMO Talk Radio, 710 a.m. KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House. You might need to wake up and smell the coffee here. Take a chug. This is absolutely amazing. For one thing, the extent of the program that Paul Davids and John Selby talk about, Blowing America's Mind, A True Story of Princeton, CIA Mind Control, LSD, and Zen. Because this is, in addition to the drugs, there's the hypnosis, the programming, the intent to in some way, shape, or form, insert an idea, a way of thinking, a thought, and then in some cases, just make you unaware that you have that thought. That is a little bit frightening. Paul, what did you guys, I know that John got out of the program quick and kind of gave you a warning, hey, dude, don't, uh-uh, and you're like, eh. What was the difference between the two of you?
It wasn't so quick he got out. He had been in for about a year before I had.
Okay.
And then he, as a senior psychology major at Princeton, he was promoted to a training hypnotist. And he intended at that time to stay on for a year, stay on after he graduated, and work full-time at the Institute as a hypnotist in these experiments. That changed.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. He was even offered a draft deferment at that time for staying on because it was said that the work was in the national interest, but, you know, we didn't understand why. I mean, I was really naive then. I was younger than John Selby. By the way, John Selby has become quite a well-known writer. He has a lot of books out there, including Seven Masters, One Path, I think is one of his best-known books, but many popular psychology books, philosophy books on marijuana.
Didn't he go and live with John with Alan Watts after he
yes.
departed from the
program? Alan Watts, yes, the writer, philosopher, author of Psychotherapy East and West. He was sort of John Selby's savior after John got out of the program and fled Princeton and went to the West Coast and sort of started his life over at that point and was getting visits from spooks. And that even happened at Princeton. It's in the book. Both of us had that.
Explain, yeah, the definition.
But we didn't really know who these guys were, why they were overseeing, and why they were sometimes threatening. But John Selby released information at that time about the studies with LSD and tying it to LSD use at Princeton at that time. And it got in a major newspaper. And it got him into some trouble. There's a chapter, true chapter. It all happened. His encounter with the president of Princeton University at that time about LSD.
Yeah, he tried to go public with it.
Yeah, president was Robert Goheen, who very interestingly, after he was president of Princeton, was appointed by Nixon to be the U.S. ambassador to India, which is, of course, a nuclear-armed country. And, you know, we speculated, what were some of the hidden connections of the president of Princeton, you know, that he ends up with an appointment like that from the president? Because it was hotly debated what President Goheen may have known about what was going on with this research at the time. There was later, about 10 years later, an article in the New York Times when MKUltra was exposed nationally, and all the information started to flood out. The New York Times had an article saying that the CIA had informed both Princeton University and Columbia University of secret behavioral research, which was their CIA MKUltra program at Princeton Psychology Department, New Jersey Neuropsychiatric Institute. So we were right in the thickets of it and really didn't know what we were in the middle of until about 10 years later when MKUltra was exposed.
Accidentally.
I mean, everything on MKUltra.
Accidentally exposed. That the way that came about was the, you know, finding the misfiled info. That was excellent.
Sidney Gottlieb was appointed to be head of the mind control project by Richard Helms, who was the head of the CIA at that time. And Helms ordered Sidney Gottlieb to burn everything on MKUltra. But I think there was more than 100 boxes of files that were never destroyed, but were found, I think, in 1976 or 1977, mislabeled as financial documents about some other project. And then it all flooded out because Helms was no longer in charge of the CIA. Gottlieb was gone. And Stansfield Turner had come in under Jimmy Carter, if I have my facts correct. So they had Senate hearings about it that Ted Kennedy was involved in. And that was in the late 1970s. And that was when, you know, the name of New Jersey Neuropsychiatric Institute came out tied to CIA mind control. The names of the doctors we had worked with, Carl Pfeiffer was one of the names who was at the Institute and also at Princeton and set up the Princeton Brain Bio Center. And Humphrey Osmond then left the New Jersey Neuropsychiatric Institute, ended up working at a mental hospital in Alabama. And the top hypnotist at the Institute, Bernard Aronson, after this, he was no longer a member of the American Psychological Association. So I don't know what happened there, but
isn't he the one you had the encounter with and said, no way, uh-uh, before he went to Canada?
It was Osmond who was in Canada.
Okay.
And Aronson, had been in Princeton the whole time and was after this. But, in terms of how we regard it, well, let me go to a question that you asked, because you talked about hypnosis in terms of implanting thoughts.
Yes.
It wasn't so much implanting thoughts. It was implanting experiences. It was being used to study perception and the difference between the effects of psychedelic drugs and madness, psychosis, schizophrenia symptoms. And so they would change your perception of the world. Psychedelic drugs do that. They might have the effect of increasing depth perception, for example.
Yes.
Massively. And then the question is, what effect does that have on your behavior, your perception? So they were giving hypnotic conditions to, for example, make your depth perception completely flat, so you don't have any dimensionality, and see, does that cause you to have a psychotic reaction, a withdrawal? And they changed your perception of time, your perception of size, leaving the body. I mean, John Selby had out-of-body experiences, and they did block memory of the experiences. But that was imperfect, and the memories would come back. The promise was always that by the time you finished the experiences, they were going to get rid of the memory erasure, the blocking, and let you remember everything. But nothing comes quite like it was advertised. And John Selby and I had to piece together really what happened to us over the years.
Paul, just a second, because you do a demonstration of this in the book, when the chapter the seven, Yab Yum, when you actually think for a moment you're George Harrison, or a few minutes.
Yes.
Yeah, you go through the experience of being, you think you are George Harrison, and then there's no memory of it.
Yes, exactly.
So that's a good demonstration of how it worked.
Yeah, I mean, I was under hypnosis. I was concerned about when I had to catch a plane back to London. Was I going to miss my plane? You know, somebody asked me to sign an autograph as George Harrison. I mean, it's crazy as it sounds. When you undergo the deep hypnosis training for months, they actually give you a trigger word that you don't remember. But when you're in the hypnosis chair, you relax, and it takes you down into the hypnotic state. And then they make it deeper and deeper, and then they play with your mind. People have asked me, because people have heard that, you know, they had assassination training as part of MKUltra. They were trying to create the perfect assassin. and looking for the perfect drugs, combination of drugs and hypnosis that would work for that. They said, how do you know you weren't part of that program? Mm-hmm. My answer is it had nothing to do with that. That was Project Artichoke. And for that, okay, they were taking loners, people who had no family, people who could be made to disappear in society, you know, without a trace, without people looking for them. They weren't using Ivy League students, you know, for that program.
Yeah, this who would was, be immediately.
Had completely different intent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the doctors, Osmond and Aronson wrote a book called Psychedelics, The Uses and Implications of Psychedelic Drugs. We cover all of this in Blowing America's Mind.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that eventually they wrote a description of the hypnosis experiment that we were part of and what its goals were and commentary on some of the subjects. And they chose subjects with very different backgrounds. For example, John Selby grew up on a cattle ranch. He was literally a cowboy at Princeton. We were as different as two people could be. You know, I was the son of a college professor of American history, and you know, he grew up on a cattle ranch. So there was a real mix of personalities that they were studying in this. And I guess I want to let people feel and know that our reaction all these years later is by no means all negative toward the program and what we experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by no means all negative toward the doctors that we worked with either, who I think had positive motivations in the study and were deeply interested in the psychedelic drugs, as we were then and continue to be. I mean, I think there is a genuine resurgence of interest now. Those drugs started out being used by the military as a sort of a chemical warfare agent. They were looking for the perfect truth serum. They were looking for ways that enemy combatants might be put in a state of mind where they wouldn't fight on the battlefield. And LSD was in the forefront of what they were studying there going back to the 1950s. And the spread of the drug in American society, it really came about through the CIA. It never would have happened if the CIA wasn't as deeply immersed in it as it was.
There's this, I mean, you cover a lot of material. We can't get into it all in this hour, but the experience that Jonathan had and the report from the infirmary of the when he was admitted in as a junior for extreme anxiety and paranoia.
Yeah. This is part of the irony of what we show in the book, because you're getting two points of view of the two people involved as subjects in the program. And John Selby, when he had that experience, he hadn't been promoted to training hypnotist yet.
Mm-hmm.
But what's, I think, really interesting about the whole structure of the book is that while I was all gung-ho joining up in the project, really enthusiastic about it, he was essentially having a nervous breakdown. I mean, he was undergoing a psychological crisis. And you see into his mind the things that were happening to him while he was supposed to be my training hypnotist. And, you know, you have me beginning to undergo some of these experiences that he's inducing, and he's sitting there in another chair in the same room and literally cracking up and having to interrupt the session and go run to Dr. Aronson because he thinks a condition was never removed from him. He remembers an out-of-body experience where he was turned into a bird and he flew away, and that he thinks that part of him was just erased from his personality while he was out of body, while he was a bird, and that when he was returned to his body, part of him never came back.
We're going to take a quick break. We are running out of time. There's so much to this story, we can't get all the details. So that's an incentive for you to get the book again, Blowing America's Mind. We're going to take a quick break and come back and kind of give you an overview of the whole point of getting this information out now and where you can get it on Wendy's Coffee House. It was the 60s. Picture, so I guess the music would have been the Beatles and some real cool Jefferson Airplane, maybe. Hall?
Or Moody Blues, Timothy Leary's dead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, The Grateful
Legend
Dead.
Legend of a Mind.
Paul Davids, my guest, co-author of Blowing America's Mind, A True Story of Princeton CIA Mind Control, LSD, and Zen. And we are running out of time. There's so much in here. It's really hard to get into all the meat of it. You guys, it took a while for you to come to terms with this. What do you hope to achieve by putting it out now?
Well, I think that we've kind of come full circle during the whole Just Say No era. Everything having been banned, all of the arrests from marijuana possession, things have changed now. I mean, marijuana is legal in about half the states in the country, either for medical or for what they call recreational uses. And the news reports say that LSD is back. The young are experimenting with it again. Steve Jobs touted it as something that helped him reach the heights of technological understanding that resulted in so many of our modern devices. At any rate, we wanted our story to be told so people could see all the different dimensions, the pros and cons, the positive experiences, and the nightmares that resulted from allowing scientists to really tamper with our minds when we were college students. It's a long time ago. You know, we've gotten over it. We've recovered from it. We've gone on to so many other things.
Absolutely.
You know, I've had a career in film.
Your career.
I've made about 10 films now, including the film Timothy Leary's Dead, which was the biography of the main promoter of LSD in the 1960s, which you can find streaming online. Blowing America's Mind just came out, and go to Amazon. You can get either the printed book or get it on Kindle. If you have some other device, you know, Barnes & Noble has it too for other devices. It's an easy book to find now, Blowing America's Mind. And, you know, we've worked on it forever. For half our lives to get it right, and we finally decided now is the right timing. The scientists that we talk about in the book, everybody's deceased.
Yes.
So
convenient.
So we figured the coast is clear, you know. We both had really good careers. John Selby writing a lot of books, and I've made a lot of films, including Roswell for Showtime, and Jesus in India, and Starry Night, and The Life After Death Project, which you and I talked about, and we talked about the book, An Atheist in Heaven, which is my book about the Life After Death Project. So we've been through, you know, extraordinary careers, and there was just, we felt at this stage, less to fear of the repercussions that might come from.
Well, we got to talk again. Okay, we're gonna wrap it up now. But yeah, there's so much here, and especially with all of your other work with Forry Ackerman, and I loved the Sci-Fi Boys. Is that the one that was?
Yes.
And
one
then
of my
the one with Van Gogh, Starry Night.
Starry Night.
Yeah. So see, it didn't keep you from being successful. And then we didn't even get into what your wife does between the two of you. It's just like, okay, life goes on. And some of this stuff, though, is still incredibly fascinating and powerful. If you have a chance, go out and get the book or get online to check it out. Paul Davids, thank you for talking with me. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for talking with me about Blowing America's Mind.
And I'll put some links up on Wendy's Coffee House, too, because there's more to this story, and it goes on. It's amazing. So much to explore here. Stay curious. Till next time, see ya. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio.